Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Lompo Sumedho sent a letter to the Sangha. Share that with you. This is the Katina season. I am preparing to go to Ubon on Wednesday to attend the Katinas at Wat Nong Papong and Wat Pa Nanachat. I'm very well, having spent the Pantsa on a self-retreat, which means not going anywhere, not engaging in talking, living silently alone for nearly 3 months. This was my 46th Pantsa as a bhikkhu. I had my first Pantsa as a samanera in Nongkai in 1966, which adds up to 47 years practicing meditation. During these past 3 months, I felt such gratitude to the Buddha, to Thanajan Cha, and to all the others who have so kindly encouraged, supported, and taught me. I have been truly blessed in this life. I have quite determinedly followed the teaching and instruction of the Four Noble Truths for these 47 years, always applying it to my mind and body, reflecting on the impermanence of the body and the mental states, the continuous arising and ceasing of thoughts, feelings, and sensory experiences. One has to make a strong determination to practice until the powerful obstruction of the condition and the sense of self and self-identity has broken down, leaving one with the empty mind and pure conscious awareness. For the past 40 years, I've been involved in establishing monasteries, teaching, giving retreats, training monks and nuns, ordaining monks and nuns, attending meetings, etc., etc., which has in no way diminished or obstructed my practice. It's all practice. The path is always here and now. This Pantsa I've had the opportunity to not have any duties or obligations other than attending the fortnightly recitation of the Patimokkha. Thanajan Jnana Dhammo has been most kind and helpful in allowing this opportunity to happen along with the other monks and lay supporters of the Ratanawan Monastery. The time went by so quickly. The 3 months seemed to vanish into thin air, and then suddenly I realized it was the Pavarana day, the end of the Pantsa. What the future holds is unknown, but at my age, death is an ever stronger certainty, the last big event at this incarnation. I find Maranasati ever more peaceful, and I am quite looking forward to death. I contemplate and reflect on the ending of thoughts, sensations, and emotions. All conditions point to the unconditioned, the deathless reality, Amaravati. I send you all my blessings and best wishes, yours in the Dhamma, Lompo Sumedhacan. And there's some pictures with that I can show you tomorrow if you want. So, Lompo's dedication to taking the teaching and not just keeping it at some kind of intellectual level, not just accumulating information, and then taking the challenges of his extremely responsible life. And using it all for practice, I find that tremendously inspiring. So, he doesn't, in that letter, you notice he doesn't complain about all the responsibilities he had, but he actually just sees it constantly as the practice, whatever. So we can reflect on that. How do we, the responsibilities we have here. How do we use them to deepen our insight into our own attachments and suffering? And how can the challenges of our responsibilities actually liberate us? And that's always the case in a practice which is based on understanding oneself rather than just creating calm conditions, both inwardly, outwardly. It's not just a matter of acquiring calm states of mind or getting personal spaces of calm, but it's actually using everything. So whatever, it's all for practice. Personal space is very good. It's a different opportunity. Some people don't know how to do that. They always need to be busy. So that's something you want to look at too. When you have responsibility, do you resent it? Can you live without always picking everything up? Can you just go to your kuti and be quiet and not always be doing? It's a balance that each of us has. It has a different probably inclination. Some people want to run away from responsibilities. Some people are too responsible sometimes. You're just always picking up everything for everyone, which is another kind of source of suffering. And each of us have tendencies towards that. And that's what we're learning about. So you watch how the sense of self arises, why I can't put something down, or why I always don't want to pick something up. Is it skillful? Is it unskillful? The method of freeing the mind is to be able to establish constant awareness of the way things are, a sense of presence, and really, really knowing what's going on in the moment in terms of the khandhas. So we break down the self view by looking at body as body, feeling as feeling, perception as perception, thought as thought, consciousness as consciousness, rather than my body, me thinking, storylines, narratives, all the sense of self that arises. So the five khanda formulation is a very important way of getting perspective. And that brings you into the present moment. So to see body as body or feeling as feeling, you have to actually be in the present moment. And when we're not in the present moment, we're just thinking about ourselves, what we're going to do, or we're resenting something, or doubting something, fantasizing about something. So the mind swings from past to future with self-view constantly. So as I was saying last week, just this kind of the imperative to really bring your mind to the present moment, really be very diligent with that. What is going on now? What's happening now? Is it resentment? Is it fascination? Is it whatever? What's going on now? And not to create a sense of self around that. Not to create a person around that. And the way we do that is we learn to bring up perception of change. That's the basic method. So you have to get your mind into the present moment again and again and again, train in that. And then bring up the perception of change. Now, what happens if you do that? Or how can you do that? One way you can do that is you can use the breath to develop the perception of change, rather than trying to just get absorbed into the breath. If you sit down in your meditation, you pick up the breath as the object of meditation, and you use that for the perception of change, for developing the perception of change. So the breath is moving, it's changing, out-breath feels different than in-breath, and the very sense of the body sitting here and breathing, and then the movement of thought in and out, of breath awareness, different moods coming and going, sounds, people moving, there is this constantly changing experience of being here, being present. So that's a very deliberate development of perception. You gotta sit down and actually make the perception of change your practice. And that's different than just believing in change in a kind of Buddhist way. It's an engagement with life through a certain perception. Just as if I'm lost in criticism, I can be engaging in life in a very judgmental way. I can be judging this person, that person, criticizing this, that person, and that person. So my mind is engaging with the present moment through the bias of aversion, say. That's one kind of perception. That perception, of course, is based on defilement. Or I can be functioning from a perception of anxiety. People don't like me, or I'm no good, maybe self-disparagement, or fear, perception of fear, what's going to happen, anxiety, perception of hypochondria, my body's, you know, something's happening to my body, all kinds of different perceptions we can interpret life through. But the problem with those is that because we grasp them, that becomes a kind of believing in all of it, and there's no real sense of distance and perspective. And the way we get distance of perspective is to know anicca sanya, perception of change. And how do you do that? And that's something you have to ask yourself. Do you cultivate the perception of change systematically? Or is it something you every now and then you notice? No, that's not enough. You need to systematically make the perception of change quite powerful in consciousness. But a dominant theme in your day-to-day reflection on the way things are. Otherwise, what dominates are the habits of anxiety, or the habits of criticism and judgment, or sexual fantasy, self-disparagement, various kinds of memory patterns. And so the mind is always caught with the khandhas. This is always attachment to the khandhas, engagement with the khandhas, and the liberation of the heart is from disenchantment with the khandhas, disengagement from the khandhas. And the way to do that, the method, is to see the khandhas as anicca dukkha anatta. So when you deliberately pick up the breath as your object of meditation, and then you sustain anicca sanya, you make that the intention, you pick up the breath, and then you start to focus, or you start to recollect, what's the changing nature of a breath? How does the breath differ, in-breath and out-breath? What is that like? You begin to abide as like witnessing Dharma, the Dharma of change. And what that leads to is a kind of insight that the sense of self that comes up. So as you're watching the breath, a sense of self will arise. Maybe you'll think about something you talked about earlier in the day, and you'll rehash it in some way, or perhaps you'll fantasize about something you're going to do tomorrow, or maybe there'll be some kind of sexual fantasy that will come into your mind, or maybe you'll have some kind of creative idea, or maybe you'll feel judgmental towards someone, or irritated, or so all kinds of these different things come into mind, and they're invested with a sense of self. But if you're using as a kind of background contemplation and meditation and focus, anicca sanya with the breath, so you're watching the breath, observing the breath as it's changing, then as a sense of self arises, as a fantasy or as memory, what you'll notice is every night you'll notice how it ends. You notice it's ending. And it's ending, you notice the end of a sense of self. And if you start to note that, you start to note this is the ending of a thought. This is the ending of a fantasy. This is the ending of a resentment or whatever. In little ways, you begin to touch the consciousness which is not defined through a sense of self, which hasn't caught by the sense of self, And then you get little glimpses of the mind which is empty of self-perception, empty of self-identity, say, self-identity. And that's a kind of a, what you need to note that, you need to realize that, cessation of the sense of self. So the perception of anicca, contemplating anicca, consistently leads to that vision, seeing, not necessarily some spectacular one-off insight, but constantly you begin to notice that the sense of self, with its fantasies or self-doubts or whatever, is just an object that comes and ceases. And you begin to note ceasing, the ending of a thought and the ending of a sense of self. And as you note that, your mind begins to abide more in a very peaceful way. Because now you're practicing the noticing of change rather than being caught in the desire to change. And the desire to change, as you know, when it's caught up with ignorance, is what keeps the mind restless. So you might feel hot in the room, just a simple thing like feeling hot. Or you might feel discomfort of some physical sort, hot or cold or whatever. And as soon as that comes up, rather than noting it as change, the mind starts to think, when is this going to be over, or we should open a window, or we should turn the heat up, or we should do something. So the mind begins to create a sense of a self from the desire not to feel discomfort. It happens very quickly, in little ways. But if you're contemplating anicca change, then, and you're doing that with the breath, as heat arises, say, or discomfort, you can see how the sense of self is created with desire. And you can just notice a discomfort has a changing nature. So what's the changing nature of discomfort? So the very discomfort takes you to peace rather than to sense of self. And that's something you need to constantly do. So whatever the negative or positive impulse is that comes either through body or through mind, through emotion, that if you're not aware of it, it takes you to a sense of self, thought, distraction, restlessness, and a lack of peace. But if you notice it, and you notice this as a changing thing, then you're in that kind of witnessing posture. This is just changing. The stronger the self-identity is, the stronger the suffering is, of course. So if you're very anxious kind of person, you'll go like that. If you're a very critical kind of person, if you have a lot of memories of something you did, or if it's sexual desire, these are all just the conditions that we get caught up into. So non-grasping, how do you practice non-grasping? It's by noticing change. You're not trying to change anything, you're just noticing change. So I guess I would ask you, like, do you cultivate a sustained perception of change in your practice, or is it just a kind of Buddhist agreement? When you notice the mind-body experience in meditation, do you see it as a changing phenomenon in the five khandhas, or do you get caught in identifying with it and reacting to it? Memory, future, past, self. What kind of self-identities tend to preoccupy you? So classically, the preoccupations that we are encouraged to let go of are based around the hindrances. That's the sort of the classic definition. But there's things, kind of subsets of that which exist. So if you look at just dullness, sleepiness, how that is... That attachment is a lack of, you know, there's a whole sense of self growing there. Lack of energy, thinking. So to actually notice dullness as a changing phenomenon takes some vigor, takes some clarity, takes some effort. And so we have methods to try to sustain presence. We have methods to try to deepen our perception of change, depending on the hindrance. So if you're a very critical, judgmental person, try to introduce metta. Try to induce more kindness, more forgiveness to yourself. So how do you do that? If you're very, very self-critical, if you're critical of others, if your mind is always fantasizing about sexual things or food or buying things or purchasing things or whatever, you have to bring in contemplations of death, contemplations of different kinds of contemplations. And these are balancing methods to bring us back to the same presence, to the same perception of change. And so that's where your individual practice arises. What, when you sit for an hour, what happens to you? What actually goes on in your mind? Are you with the way things are? Or do you get preoccupied? And if you get preoccupied, and what is it? What is it about your consciousness that nabs you, that nabs your attention, that kidnaps your attention? What kind of thought formations, what kind of sense of self preoccupies the time? And then begin, you know, that's the sort of you diagnose that, you know, is that yourself? And then, so what kind of practices do you need to do to awaken to that, to see it arising and ceasing, to see it as something changing? What kind of suggestions do you need to make to yourself? What kind of intentions do you need to make to yourself? What kind of determinations should you make in order to help you to see the self-identities, the compulsions, the preoccupations as anicca dukkha anatta? Non-identity, changing, not self. So where does self come up? What kind of selfies come up? Self and other. How does it come up? You might have like really clever ideas, might be like creative stuff. Might be the self-disparaging, whatever. How does self you come up? And how can you introduce anicca sanya into self you? Rather than trying to be someone who doesn't have self you, which is another self you, or just getting caught up in some kind of self-analysis. Oh, why am I thinking so much? And the endless tricks that self-view brings up. But just to remember and say, this is changing. And how does it feel in its changing nature? How does that feel? How is that? That's not a judgment. It's not based on tanha. So as we cultivate anicca sanya, as we kind of get more, as we see the point of that, as we see the method of that, as we see the rightness of that, that is the practice, then what it begins to apply to is the very feeling of craving. The craving is a feeling. And begin to notice craving as an object rather than being the subject of our fantasies and desires. And as you notice craving arising, and as you begin to notice craving ceasing, you begin to have the peace of non-craving, the nirodha, the cessation of craving, the end of suffering, the end of desire, in little ways. And this all comes from the cultivating and strengthening the perception of change, making that very fundamental to you, the way you're viewing the world, the way you're witnessing the world. So keep reminding yourself, this is changing. You get stressed out about something, or get upset about something, or get bored, or restless, or angry, or frightened, or worried, or whatever. Just keep reflecting, how is this changing? What's the changing nature of this worry? What's the changing nature of this anger or this resentment? And how is it changing? That keeps you in the sense of non-grasping, keeps you back into non-grasping rather than kind of forward into identity and grasping. And the more one repeats that, the more the refuge becomes very apparent in Buddha knowing Dharma, in the awareness of change. And it begins by just the simple exercise of sitting down, bringing breath, getting good posture, making conscious the feeling of breathing, and then what's the feeling of change in the breath? It's just that. And the more we train in that perception, the more that perception dominates. That's how it works. So if I can spend an hour contemplating the changing nature of breath, I'll also notice the changing nature of thought and bodily feeling and all of that, but that will begin to play out through the day. Inichasanya will be something that begins to be to click into all the states of mind that I'm of body and mind that I'm experiencing throughout the day. So keep reinforcing that. And that's not something you have to become. You know, it's not far away from any of us. It's just something you need to remember and make important. If you don't think it's important, then of course you won't see the point of doing it, you won't make the intention, and so be it. But I do think that you know, that's why our teaching emphasizes that a lot. Anicca-sanya. All right, I'll leave that for your reflection. Sadhu Paranya Dhamma Se Sadhu.